Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the workshop, you will hear from our panel of expert speakers. We will allow time for questions and comments following the presentation. Instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star, then zero on your touchtone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Mesper, Senior Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you so much, Audra. And I, too, would like to welcome everyone to the Cancer Care Connect Education Workshop, Managing Eye and Vision Changes Related to Cancer Treatments. And today's program is supported by the Aline Roos Memorial Trust and Sarah K. DeCozart, Article 10th Perpetual Charitable Trust. And we really want to thank them for their support of this incredibly important program today. And it's a program that we provide at least once a year. It's so important. Nobody really does address this topic. And I do want to say a few things about the participants on the call today. We have over 153 participants on the call who come from all of the United States, from both urban, rural, suburban, and frontier communities. And we also have international participants from Canada, Iraq, the Philippines, Saudi Arabia, Uganda, and the United Kingdom. So it is truly a global call. And now it is my pleasure to introduce our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Kapil Mishra. And Dr. Mishra is board-certified UCI health ophthalmologist, medical and surgical diseases of retina and ocular oncology, clinical interest in medical, retinal, and surgical diseases, intraocular tumors and ocular side effects from systemic chemotherapy, University of California, Irvine School of Medicine. And Dr. Mishra will be addressing an overview of common eye and vision changes related to chemotherapy to cancer treatments, discussion of common eye and vision changes, including causes and risk factors, and tips to manage dry eyes, watery eyes, itching eyes, blepharitis, loss of eyelashes, changes in vision, cataracts, floaters, and flashing lights. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Mishra.
Wonderful. Thank you, Dr. Mesner. Good morning and good afternoon and good evening, wherever the listeners are on all over the world, which it's such a pleasure to be able to chat with all of you and talk about this important topic, which can sound pretty daunting and pretty scary of losing vision related to cancer treatments and cancer itself. But before I get into the specifics of it, I'd like to just sort of take a step back and really just kind of relieve the audience members that there's always something that we can do if there's any vision changes related to any of these treatments or whatever you're going through. And so there always are treatment options. And as ophthalmologists and eye care providers, we work very closely with oncologists, your general oncologist, to make sure that we still abide by the tenets of medicine in which life matters above all, and then the eye itself, and then vision. And so our goal is really to try as hard as possible not to stop your cancer treatments, because we understand that the value of these amazing drugs and the newer drugs that are coming onto the market provide a lot of value for your underlying systemic condition. So our goal is really to work with you and your oncologist and all of the other members of your team that are taking such great care of you to ensure that, you know, we provide the best overall health for you as possible. The other thing I wanted to add is that, you know, the eye is extremely complex. So there are multiple components of the eye. Think of it like a very sophisticated camera. And when you notice that your vision has been affected in some sort of way, it really is hard to tell what along that pathway of the camera is actually affected. And that's why it's really important to really be examined, because it could be anything to the front part of the eye, to the back part of the eye, to the middle part of the eye, to the optic nerve, which is the fiber optic cable that connects the eye to the brain itself, and the visual pathways that are within the brain. So when you have any vision changes, it's really important to communicate with your oncologist. And also, if you already have an existing eye care provider, is to make sure to contact them, and then also to let them know about the different medications that you're on, what your cancer history is. You know, in ophthalmology, we tend to be pretty isolated in some ways, except in the field or in the disease of cancer, because we understand that there is so much systemic association and different changes that can happen related to the eye with the underlying cancer. And then lastly, before I kind of, again, get into the common vision changes related to cancer treatments, I want to emphasize that we cannot always blame the medication. Cancer patients, just like any other patient, are allowed to have other eye issues that are going on. And so it's important that we all kind of realize that there's no reason to necessarily jump towards blaming the cancer treatment itself, because patients can have cataracts and dry eye and retinal changes and glaucoma, et cetera, that has nothing to do with the cancer treatment. In fact, cancer itself can also cause changes to the eyes, as well as the alterations in the blood and the blood counts can also cause changes to the eyes, and cancer can spread to the eyes. So as scary as some of these things sound, it could also just be as benign as just regular dry eyes that everyone gets during certain times of the year. So it's good to keep in mind that we don't necessarily need to jump towards one cause and that we should have sort of a good overview of the eye and not necessarily blame the medication, because again, our role is not to take you off the medication. Our role is to make sure that we can provide you the best vision in the context of making sure that you have the best quality of life and the best treatment options by your oncologist. So for the common eye and vision changes related to cancer treatments, again, when I had mentioned that it can affect any part of the eye, it really is true. So if you think about it like the camera, in the front part where you think of the lens cover and the glass that covers the lens, we can call this the cornea and the ocular surface. So the ocular surface consists of the conjunctiva, which is a clear translucent part overlying the white part of the eye, with the white part of the eye being the sclera. And then the cornea is, think of it like the window or the clear cover over the lens when we go back to the camera analogy. So all of this, as well as the eyelids and the eyelashes and the tear drainage systems and the tear glands, this all constitutes the ocular surface. And so many of these cancer treatments can affect the ocular surface, and most of the time it's quite mild. Now, in all of our studies in which we look at cancer treatments, the number one side effect from the vast majority of these medications is dry eye. Now, dry eye is relatively benign, although it can be very effective of the quality of life, but relatively it's not causing too much damage of the eye. And there's, as you can tell with commercials every day, there are so many different dry eye treatments. And the reason that there's so many different eye treatments is because there are different components of the tear film, and there are different targets and different medications that address each of these targets. So that's something to dive deeper with your ophthalmologist on what exactly to use. But in general, it never hurts to use just artificial tears over the counter. There are all sorts of different brands that are available, and they all generally do the same thing. So I always tell my patients to, you know, don't go for the most expensive one. Just get whatever the cheapest one is, and you know, put that in a couple times a day if it has a preservative in it. And if it's preservative free, you can use it more often. So for the ocular surface, the easiest thing to just get started in terms of optimizing your ocular surface, even for anyone, it would be to treat it and lubricate it with dry eye drops. In terms of other cancer treatments, there's a long list of cancer treatments that are available, from checkpoint inhibitors to aromatase inhibitors to MEK inhibitors and ERK and EGFR and BCR-ABL. So there's a long, long list, and it's not up to you to really understand the different types. Of course, you would want to focus more on the ones that you're on, and you can ask your oncologist, you know, what should I look for in terms of my eyes? Because some of these medications actually do have a label in which they recommend getting routine surveillance of your eyes with an ophthalmologist, which we won't necessarily get to in this talk. So for the common eye and vision changes related to cancer treatments, it could be any sort of vision change because it's not necessarily known what part of the eye is affected, as we talked about with the camera. But it could be anything from the ocular surface, as we talked about, to cataracts. Cataracts can be affected by BTK inhibitors or CIRM or SLT3 inhibitors. And that, again, just leave that up to your ophthalmologist on kind of differentiating what is going on. And then, you know, if you go further back into the eye, and now, you know, think about it in the camera, let's go to the film in the camera. We call this the retina. There's a long list of cancer treatments that can affect the retina. Now, these are low risk. In general, many of the case series suggested that for more significant side effects, it's 1% or less when patients are on these medications. So it's pretty rare. Dry eyes can be much higher. It could be 25%, 50%. But for the more serious side effects, that is much, much rarer. And it doesn't necessarily mean that it's something that we can't manage, and we can certainly keep you on the medication. So when we're going further back in the eye, I talked about the film in the camera, the retina, that also can be affected by all sorts of different medications. And then the only way to really tell that it's the back of the eye is to get an eye exam. And then going further back, it's the fiber optic cable, the optic nerve. And the optic nerve can be inflamed or can have changes related to many, many of the cancer treatments, including immune checkpoint inhibitors, BCR-ABL inhibitors, VEGF inhibitors, SLT3, ALK inhibitors. So there's a long, long list, as you know, how many cancer treatments there are. So the main point of all of this is that really it's just worth getting an eye exam. And so in terms of what to look out for vision changes, it could be anything from something that sounds more like it's on the surface of the eye, like irritation, foreign body sensation, itching, dryness. That tends to be more the ocular surface. But any part of the eye can just cause central blurred vision or overall blurred vision, like you're looking through a cloud or a fog. And then flashes of light, floaters, missing parts of your vision, that may suggest something more towards the back of the eye. But so any time you have any sort of vision change which seems to be persistent, then I advise you to let your oncologist know or your existing eye care provider. Now, what are some tips for this, just to kind of end off in terms of managing all this? We talked a little bit about dry eyes, watery eyes, itchy eyes. All of that is lubricating the surface. You can start with over-the-counter eye drops. Now, if that doesn't seem to help, there's also ointment, over-the-counter eye ointment that's in the same aisle that you put a strip of the eye ointment inside the eye, you know, right before you go to sleep because it makes your vision blurry. And then that would be a good way to try and manage some of the dry eye symptoms. You could also have flashes and floaters, just blurred vision in general. And it's really hard to manage these without really just being examined. So don't worry too much about anything to do on your end, but really just getting an exam just to make sure what exactly is going on. That is about it. I think I had one more thing that I wanted to address. Oh, yeah, what can you do in terms of lifestyle modifications? So if you, eating healthy, exercising, wearing eye sun protection with UV-blocking sunglasses, not smoking. These are all sort of general things that are good for the eye health that, you know, affect your overall health overall. In terms of certain medications, people advocate taking omega-3 fatty acids or fish oil for dryness. And then for macular or retinal health, you know, if patients have macular degeneration, they are prescribed AREDS2, which is a combination of vitamins that is derived from a Mediterranean diet. You can take lutein and zeaxanthin, which is a common macular health set of vitamins. But all of this really is derived from eating healthy, exercising, and just overall having a better sort of quality of life from correct decisions. So I think I'll end there for the interest of time. But just to summarize, again, there's always something that we can do. There is an array of treatment options for any of these side effects. And most of the time, we do not have to stop the cancer medication. And so we always work together with your oncologist and with you to make sure that we kind of think globally in terms of your overall health. So thank you very much for your time.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Mishra. That was just a wonderful presentation, stellar. And actually, you're the first speaker and you've really set the tone for today's program, so I really want to thank you so much for your presentations, and I'm sure that there'll be lots of questions to you during the Q&A, so thank you so much. And our next speaker is Dr. Lauren Yeager, and Dr. Yeager is Assistant Professor of Clinical Ophthalmology, Pediatric Ophthalmology, and Strabismus, Edward S. Harkness Eye Institute, Columbia University Medical Center. And Dr. Yeager will be addressing guidelines for eye examinations and checkup, tips to manage low vision, and how eye products can help you manage eye and vision changes, and clinical trials, how research increases your treatment options. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Yeager.
So thank you. It is really a pleasure to be here and to speak to this audience and be on this panel with this group of doctors and colleagues. And Dr. Mishra, that was a great review. So I'm going to try to cover these topics and give some information. So first is guidelines for eye exams and checkups. And you know, a cancer diagnosis and cancer treatment is a complex process that involves a lot of various doctor's appointments. And I think, as Dr. Mishra said, you know, we still approach life first and have to do all our life-saving treatments, but it's important to consider the eyes and make it a visit and make sure that we have eye health during our cancer journey and treatment. You know, there's a variety of different eye treatments, all which can affect the eyes, and cancer itself can affect the eyes. And so it's very important that every patient gets a baseline eye exam before cancer treatment begins. And that is really giving the doctors and the patient a reference point from which to base future eye exams on. So, you know, what does the eye look like initially? Is there any problems with vision or signs of glaucoma or other issues that we could address and treat? But also later, if we're doing more eye exams, we kind of note and know what the baseline eye exam was. And so just to give you a reference for what that will look like. At your first baseline eye exam, it will be with an eye provider, whether it's an optometrist or ophthalmologist, and really full eye exam will be performed. So that's checking vision, and we usually check what's called the best corrected vision. So you'll bring your glasses, we, you know, refract your vision, try to see the best vision that a patient can get. We check the entire eye. We check eye pressure. We look at the surface of the eye and all of those anatomic areas that Dr. Mishra talked about. And that's done with a slit lamp where you sit in a machine and it's like a microscope where we can look at the eye. And then we do what's called a dilated fundus examination where we can look at the retina and get a baseline exam of the retina. And sometimes we do more formal testing with photographs or you know, different imaging systems. We might do a visual field test where we check your peripheral vision. And that's what to expect at your first eye exam. And it's important to prepare for this eye exam. I think preparation and communication is going to be a key theme throughout this. But before you start, before you go to the eye doctor, first have a conversation with your medical doctor and your oncologist. And this is done to educate yourself as a patient so that you know, what cancer you have, what stage cancer you have, what treatments will you be on. And you'll be able to take this information to your eye appointment. And then the eye doctor will know which treatments have certain side effects and what they're going to be looking out for throughout your treatment journey. And also, it's important, I think, as a patient to educate yourself about the medication and to be aware of the eye changes that can happen, right? So what drug are you on? What changes can happen on that drug? What symptoms should you look out for? How often should you be seeing an eye doctor? And that really is going to depend on what treatment you're on, what kind of cancer maybe you have or where it's impacting. And is there anything you can do to prevent? And Dr. Mishra gave some really good examples of little changes we can do in life, such as not smoking and dietary stuff that maybe can just help our overall health, but can also help our eye health. And so then you bring this to your baseline eye exam. You have that full eye exam. And then you go start your treatment. And again, the visits and how often you should be seen is really depending on, A, what drug you're on, and also, are you involved in a clinical trial, right? So we're going to get into clinical trials, so I'm going to push that back to later in this talk. But it's going to be a decision based with your ophthalmologist and your healthcare team. And also, super, super important, and I think this is a key point, is again, communication. If you are on a treatment and you notice any symptoms in your eyes, blurry vision, pain, sensitivity to light, I think bringing it up with your team, calling your eye doctor, letting your team know, verbalizing this, lets us all kind of take action and bring you in for an eye exam. And again, as Dr. Mishra mentioned, we have treatment. So it lets us do a full evaluation, see what's going on. Do we need to start you on any medications or do anything? First, to ease your symptoms, right, and make you feel better so you don't have to experience some of this maybe discomfort or eye pain, but also, you know, to heal and prevent any issues that are taking place. So be your own advocate and ask questions and raise concerns and, you know, let us work with you because we want to. So I think that covers the guidelines for eye examinations. And now we can move on to tips to manage low vision. And how do eye products help you manage your eye and vision changes? So again, and not to repeat myself, but managing low vision, the first step is communicating changes, right? So you're going to communicate it and you're going to come in. And the most common side effect that you're going to have from your treatments is dry eye. And dry eye, which we talked about, makes the surface irritated and you feel burning and sometimes tearing. You can also get some blurring from dry eye. So the best thing, like we mentioned, is maybe just pick up some artificial tears and start those in your regimen. And it's a little thing like that that can help keep the vision sharp and won't let the dry eye affect the vision. Low humidity settings makes the eyes drier, like when your heat's on, or if you sit in front of a fan or sit in front of the AC. So keeping in humid conditions all can help lubricate the surface and keep your eye moist and lubricated and help with the vision. I'm also going to go through symptoms which aren't necessarily low vision, but just helping with visual symptoms and how to manage them. So things like swelling. So when you're on treatment, you can have swelling in different parts of your body and fluid collection, and we can get that in our eyelids. And sometimes it's worse when you wake up in the morning because you've been laying down flat. And what I would say is if you are experiencing some swelling, sometimes using compresses that are warm or cold and raising your head up can help. If you're sensitive to light, using sunglasses, that can be helpful. Sometimes you can have a lot of eye strain. And, you know, many times people ask about the blue light glasses and things like that. I think for eye strain or if you're on devices a lot, putting the night setting on your iPhone and doing things like putting your device away before bedtime, taking breaks on devices, all of these can help the eye strain and eye fatigue. And then we can spend a moment focusing on low vision. If for some reason your cancer is causing low vision or blindness because it's in the eye or it's in the eye pathway, it's important to realize that there are many things we have for low vision. So we have low vision devices. We have a lot of aids for our technology and our iPads. We have a ton of low vision resources these days, and support groups, et cetera. So if for some reason you're suffering from low vision because of your cancer, bring it up with your eye doctor and your healthcare provider and let us get you hooked up with the services you need. I'm taking up a lot of time, so I'm going to hop quickly to clinical trials and how research increases your treatment options. And it's important to know that clinical trials, that's how we get new treatments in cancer care and how new treatments are introduced. So clinical trials follow strict protocols. They're done in distinct phases that usually starts in a lab. It's then brought to the FDA with something called an investigational new drug application, and a clinical protocol is made. And once it's reviewed and all the hospital guidelines and regulatory red tape is, you know, approved, you can start a clinical trial. And you have a phase one, a phase two, a phase three. And essentially the first steps in clinical trial, which is phase one, it's usually a smaller trial, is to figure out, is the drug safe? So what is the lowest dose we can use? How tolerable is it? What are the side effects? Then you go on to a phase two. Is it effective and is it safe? And this grows a little bit. And then phase three is when you say, okay, how well does this drug work? What are the side effects? Can we compare it against current treatments? And I think some things to consider, and I'm going to wrap it up because I am running over, is that as a patient, there are things to think about with clinical trials. It's important to talk about it with your team, but it allows you to access new treatments and cutting-edge therapy that might not be available. It's really, you know, you have to find out if you are a candidate for the treatment, because not everybody is. And as a patient, it's really up to you whether you want to participate in a trial, and you will be informed of the risks, the benefits, the alternatives. You have the right to decline or do something else. And there are ways to find out what clinical trials are available. So I'm going to leave it at that because I don't want to go over time, but I'm happy to talk about it in more detail at another time.
Thank you so much, Dr. Yeager. That was just a superb presentation. So very important to address the issues for the patients that you discussed. And I know there'll be questions to you during the Q&A, so thank you so much. Just a wonderful, stellar presentation. And our next speaker is Dr. Stuart Fleischman, and Dr. Fleischman is former founding director, Cancer Support Services, Continuum Cancer Centers of New York, and a part of the Mount Sinai Health System, and author and researcher in oncology. And Dr. Fleischman will be addressing the role of the multidisciplinary team, quality of life concerns, guidelines to prepare for telemedicine appointments, including technology, prepare list of questions, follow-up appointments, and discussion of open notes. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Fleischman.
It is very good for us to have some time to share information, and that way you can spread it around to your cancer care providers, your oncology team. The idea of cancer being treated in a multidisciplinary or interdisciplinary environment is extremely important. And you've heard a lot about the importance of communicating between the different specialists. I won't go over that, but I do have some additional information that when you're asked about what medicines you're taking, and we spoke a little bit before about taking some supplements that may be helpful to your vision, please make a list of all of the supplements you are taking, whether they're special teas or they're sold in a health food store or you buy them online. Please make a list of all of those. Some of them have many, many ingredients in it that are multisyllabic and very hard to pronounce. So when you go to your initial appointment, you could even take a picture of the ingredient section of the label to show that to your cancer treatment team. In many of the larger cancer treatment centers, especially the academic research centers who provide very complex treatment. This information is so important that there's an oncology specialized pharmacist who actually will help the team decide what is safe that doesn't have interactions with either the cancer treatments that you're getting or the medications that you've given to help you sustain the treatments, like Nausea medicines and steroids and things like that. So make a list of all the medicines or take the photo of the label. The other thing that's important is that many of these supplements can be very safe to use at the regular doses. So having the oncologist or the oncology team and the pharmacist know what doses you're taking is very important. That is especially important to the radiation oncologist as well. They have not been mentioned before, but they would need to know if you're taking high doses of any supplements because that may affect how the radiation affects your body. So please disclose all this information, bring the information to every one of the cancer specialists that you see. The previous speakers really emphasized the idea of quality of life, and especially since so much of the input to our everyday life comes through our eyes, having them work as well as they can is really important to all of us. So, again, that's the reason why this is such an important topic, since it is really not mentioned all the time. If we look at some of the treatment guidelines for the various common kinds of cancers, having an eye exam before treatment is not usually a part of those. So the advice to speak with your oncology team about this is ever more important because they would need to know if there is a problem with your vision or you've had eye problems in the past that may affect your treatment in any way, and that an ophthalmologist or an optometrist would need to see you in advance to do a baseline exam, as you heard. Some of my time, I was asked to spend discussing some of the new technologies, and there are many unintended consequences of the global pandemic we experienced, and one of those is the switch to having some electronic visits, or as it's often called, telehealth. And telehealth visits can happen over the phone if it's just an audio phone call, but most often when we speak about telehealth, we talk about video appointments that you and your providers will have. Those could be for an initial consultation, they may be for follow-up, they may be to answer interim questions, or sometimes to look at something that that we could examine on a telephone, be it like skin rash or something that has a large visual component to it. But doing telehealth is something that most of us providers were not skilled in before the pandemic. Most patients were unfamiliar with it, and it requires some extra preparation. As usual, when we change routines, we have to change the preparations of the routine. Having knowing who's going to initiate the call, what system you're working on. Sometimes if you have an electronic medical record at the facility where you're being treated, there's a telehealth ability through that system. Sometimes it's on a separate system. Oftentimes some application or app or software needs to be downloaded in advance. So when you make the telehealth appointment, whoever is making the appointment with you needs to help you figure out all this in advance and ask them, how do I connect? Who's going to call who? Make sure your device is fully charged or that you have it plugged in. Make sure you have a strong connection either on Wi-Fi or through your cell service, because it's really important for these systems to work to have a really good and strong signal. Prepare a set of questions in advance, just as if you were going into the office. Having or your questions answered is very important. Sometimes you can't get all of them answered in one visit, so it's probably a good idea to ask the most important questions first. One of the other unintended and good consequences of being more able to do telehealth visits, both for patients and for providers, is that if you have someone in your circle who is needs to be at your visit. Often they would have to fly in or drive in from long distances to be with you. With discussion with whoever's making the appointment, that individual can actually get a sign-on or get instructions about how to join the call from wherever they are, be it on the other side of town, in a different state, in a different country, anywhere that has a good internet connection or a good cell service where a video can easily be transmitted. So if that is the case, please also make those arrangements in advance. That can be very helpful because that individual might also be able to ask questions that you may not think of or take notes, because we do know that especially with some very complex treatment regimens, that hearing all the information and retaining it is very difficult, and having somebody write some of this information down with you can be helpful, and that person no longer needs to be sitting next to you but on an electronic connection. So those are some helpful tips for making a telehealth visit to, really successful. If it's your first time, sometimes the staff in the office will actually do a test call, sort of a dry run to make sure that the connection is successful and everything is working fine. And if you are at all concerned about having the technological capabilities to make this connection, maybe ask them to do a test call with you. Last thing I'd like to speak about is yet another unintended consequence of the electronic medical record, is that now with the protections of the health privacy laws, where our personal health information has an extra level of protection, we can actually get some of the results of our blood tests, urine tests, imaging, x-rays, CAT scans, MRIs, PET scans, as well as even biopsy reports directly to our electronic medical record. Those come in and are posted on your record at the same time they are posted for your provider. You may actually get the chance to look at these before your provider's office even sees them, nor has a chance to call you. Please, when you read these, be very, very careful about jumping to wrong conclusions. These are complex reports to read. Sometimes, if you look at the lab values, some of the lab tests should be abnormal during treatment, like especially when it comes to blood counts. We expect them to go down, but these are extremely complex and difficult reports to understand. So please don't jump to conclusions. Please call your provider's office or text them or email them or whatever, or send them a message on the information portal, however they like to have you communicate with them, and ask to set up a call with one of the people on the oncology care team. It may be the oncologist or the nurse or the physician's assistant. There are people who are trained to read these things and put them in everyday language and put them in the context of your treatment, so you know exactly what needs attention and what is fine, and or even if it's abnormal, expected to be abnormal based upon your circumstances. So please don't just jump to conclusions. These are frightening sometimes to read when don't have the ability or the education to be able to understand all the nuances of them. Those are the topics that I was asked to cover, so I'll turn the call back to Dr. Messner.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Dr. Fleischer. That was a superb presentation, Stella, and really covered a lot of topics. And I know there'll be questions to you during the Q&A as well. Thank you. And our next speaker is Ms. Lori Feingold. And Ms. Feingold is an oncology social worker at Cancer Care. And she'll be talking about Cancer Care's free programs and services and let you know how to contact our helpline and our website as well. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Feingold.
Thank you, Dr. Messner, and thank you, everybody, for taking the time to be with us today to discuss such an important topic. I'd like to tell you about Cancer Care Services. Cancer Care is a national nonprofit organization providing free professional support services and information to help people manage the emotional, practical, and financial challenges of cancer. Our comprehensive services include resource navigation, online support groups, educational programs, community programs, publications, and potential financial and co-payment assistance for medication. To give you a little bit more information about our services, our resource navigation service involves a short-term, strengths-based approach to help address and overcome health disparities and other barriers to care, including financial, practical, psychosocial, communication, employment, care coordination, and support barriers. Our navigators provide cancer-focused guidance, referrals to resources to help clients improve communication with their medical team and loved ones, and provide practical information about treatment. Our national online support groups take place using password-protected messaging boards and are led by oncology social workers who offer support and guidance. Groups are held for 15 weeks at a time, and you can register on our website to join an online support group that's specific to you. We have specific groups for various types of cancers, as well as audience-specific groups, including Spanish-speaking patients, young adults, and LGBTQ plus patients and caregivers. On Cancer Care's website, which is cancercare.org, we also have a wide range of reading material and educational support organized by cancer type and topic. This includes recorded Connect education workshops similar to this one, publications, our podcast, Cancer Out Loud, where you can hear conversations with people with cancer, caregivers, survivors, and others impacted by cancer. We offer various community programs, such as our Coping Circle workshops, like an upcoming workshop on second opinions and a series geared toward young adults with cancer. You can register for many of our programs online or through our Hope Line. As others have mentioned on this call, navigating a cancer diagnosis is not something you have to go through alone as a patient or a caregiver. By calling our Hope Line, which is 1-800-813-4673, if you live in the U.S. and Puerto Rico, you have access to cancer care oncology social workers who can help connect you with support. Building community and reaching out for help isn't always easy, but it's important to maintain your support systems and coping strategies when dealing with a cancer diagnosis. So that's a little bit about our services. I want to thank you for your time and your interest, and I'm going to turn this back to Dr. Messner.
Oh, thank you so much, Sangal. That was a wonderful presentation, quite stellar, and lots of resources for our participants to have. And now we're going to move right on to the Q&A. And I'm going to ask Audra to explain to you how to post your online questions.
Audra? Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will take questions from the web only. You may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question. Dr. Messner?
Okay. So this is a question from Dr. Mishra. Which nutritional supplement do you suggest for promoting eye function during chemotherapy?
It's a really good question. I think it's hard to really give an exact supplement just because we discussed about different parts of the eye being affected. But a lot of the supplements are really just based on living a healthy life. I think for the ocular surface, you can take fish oil or omega-3 fatty acids is reasonable to take to help with your dry eye symptoms. And then for any of the cancer treatments that affect the retina, you can take lutein and zeaxanthin would be an option as well. AREDS2 is a wonderful supplement, but it's only studied for intermediate age-related macular degeneration. But those vitamins come from a Mediterranean diet. So if you're eating green leafy vegetables, lean fishes twice a week, legumes, those sorts of things, that really is all the supplements that you're needed for good eye health.
Thank you so much. There was a question from one of our participants. Are there particular cancer medicines or classifications of medications that affect cataracts? Long-term effects on children's eye who receive chemotherapy, will they have cataracts early?
So I can answer that as a pediatric ophthalmologist. I think that there are various medications used in cancer treatment and just treatments in general that can impact the eye, such as steroids, right? Some of the cancer regimens involve high-dose steroids. We know that a side effect of steroids could be cataract or even high pressure in the eye. If children are receiving radiation or adults are receiving radiation to the eye, that can lead to early cataracts. So without getting into specifics and to specific drugs, yes, there sometimes are cataracts as side effects. Cataracts are treatable, which is good, right? Just like adults have cataract surgery. If necessary, children can have cataract surgery. So it is a reversible cause of vision loss or decreased vision. And we have very good ways to remove cataracts and treat them. But it really depends on one's individual treatment plan and what they're having done and their risks of developing cataracts.
Thank you so much. And Dr. Mishra, question for you. Have been on various chemo drugs for 4-plus years, ovarian stage 4A. Had 2 cataract surgeries due to chemo, but shortly after I developed a wrinkle in my retina in one eye. Could the wrinkle be related to the chemo too?
Yeah, it's an excellent question. What I suppose the wrinkle could be is what we call an epiretinal membrane. What that is a extra layer that forms on the surface of the retina. And, you know, the risk factors for it are, there's a long list. It's not typically from the cancer treatments. It is from having surgeries in the eyes, which, you know, having cataract surgery would be the main risk for it. Age, any inflammation in the eye, any trauma to the eye, any autoimmune disease, any bleeding in the eye. There's just a whole list of them. So it's very, very common to develop a wrinkle in the retina. So it's hard to really say if it's directly related to the treatment.
Excellent. So this is for Dr. Yeager. In 4 years of chemo, my eyelashes never really grew back. I'm careful in washing my eyelids and once got blepharitis. What treatment do you recommend? Someone said a warmed or up small clean potato works well as they compress as warmth lasts.
Can you repeat the last part for me? Would you mind?
Yes. What treatment do you recommend? Someone said a warmed up small clean potato works well as a compress as warmth lasts.
Oh, it sounds like a warm potato. Understood. So it sounds like maybe the oil glands are getting clogged and maybe developing size and what we call chalazions, which is just a clogged oil gland that sticks around. And we often recommend using warmth to the eyelids because what that does is it liquefies the oil glands and it kind of helps expel all that junk that's been stuck there leading to the blepharitis or the chalazions. And so a warm potato actually is a nice way to apply heat because if you take a baked potato, it keeps the heat. I actually like using a hard-boiled egg. I think if you boil eggs, keep the shell on, and wrap it in a towel, that keeps the warmth for a long period of time. So I oftentimes, for my patients who need warmth, I agree the warm compress, it stays warm for about 10 seconds, but a hard-boiled egg works great. You can also put in a cotton sock, dried rice, uncooked rice, and you can put that in the microwave, again, in a cotton sock, and that works nicely. So those are good ways to apply heat. And just keeping the eyelids clean using baby shampoo or a type of face wash that you can use on the lashes just to keep everything clean, or micellar water on the lids is also a good way to clean the eyes and get off any debris that's there.
And a question for Dr. Mishra. Any recommendations for addressing blepharitis due to cataract treatment? on third year of aromatase inhibitors?
Yeah, it's a great question. Honestly, I think Dr. Yeager did a wonderful job kind of describing the blepharitis treatment. So the same thing would apply. You know, with meibomian gland dysfunction, using compresses or just using lid scrubs, which they sell. But you could also just take, you know, a cloth with a little bit of baby shampoo and just scrub a little bit at the eyelid margin. Those are sort of the main things. You know, I think if those things don't work, there are antibiotics that your eye doctor can prescribe, such as azithromycin or doxycycline. You know, of course, you should be evaluated first. And, you know, there's a whole list of different eye drops that can help promote the lipid component of the film. So it would be best to be examined. But I agree with Dr. Yeager on all her points on some nice tricks to be able to help with this.
And just last question for Dr. Mishra, can you please answer my question? How long does it take for the eye to become normal, not more dry after chemo?
That's an excellent question. I think most of the time that the dryness is reversible after chemotherapy. It really just depends on the duration of the chemotherapy and which type it is. And what type of toxicity, if any, that it caused on the ocular surface. So Elahere, for instance, can cause keratitis. Belantamab can also cause a keratitis. But, you know, these can take a long time with long steroid courses to be able to improve. But, you know, other things for, let's say, checkpoint inhibitors, if you get some dryness, if you're off the medication, then the dryness can get better. But there is no quantifiable sort of exact time. It really does vary based on the duration, the dose, and which one you're on.
Well, thank you so much. I want to thank our speakers. You've been phenomenal. I want to thank also our participants. I'm going to ask our speakers to provide just a takeaway from today's program, and I'll start with Dr. Mishra.
Yeah, the takeaway again is that there are so many options for treatment, and we can always come up with something to improve your vision. And so, you know, always sort of maintain that hope, as scary as it can be. And finally, always communicate with the entire team. And then, you know, our main goal is really not to stop these treatments, these cancer treatments, but to work with you, to work with your medication and your oncologist to maintain you on these drugs and to treat your vision changes.
And Dr. Fleischman?
Yes, communication, number one, with your healthcare team. If they don't know the answer, they will know how to find out. And oncology teams will know subspecialists in the area who understand both their organ and cancer and the interface in between. And the second thing would be to prepare well for a telehealth visit. And the third thing would be to read reports that come into your portal through the electronic health record. Very gingerly, I would be very careful about jumping to bad conclusions, and I would call or message your team to make sure that someone from the office can go over these tests with you so you can understand them properly.
Thank you so much. And Dr. Yeager?
My colleagues have excellent points, and I would just reiterate, not to be repetitive, but I agree. I think communication is key. So often behind the scenes, you know, we're all doctors from each team are discussing your cases and working on what's going on in your care. And we want to hear from you. I think oftentimes I've heard patients say, oh, I waited to my visit. I didn't want to call, but we want to hear from you. We want you to be an active participant in your care. So please let us know if things change and don't wait until the next visit to bring up something that's going on, whether, you know, it's your vision or blurry, et cetera. Let us know and advocate for yourself. I think being your own advocate is extremely important in healthcare.
Well, thank you so much. And, Ms. Feingold.
Yes, as I mentioned before, you know, cancer obviously is a difficult disease to navigate, and you don't have to go through it alone. There are a lot of resources out there. There's a lot of support. Cancer care helps with a lot of the non-medical needs of people with cancer. And so I would recommend that anybody you know, refer them to us. Again, our hope line is 1-800-813-4673. We provide a lot of information. Master's level oncology social workers are on the phone and can help with a variety of needs for people with cancer and caregivers and other people affected by it.
Thank you so much. I want to thank our speakers again. You've been phenomenal. I want to thank our participants for asking such really fantastic questions. We unfortunately could not get to everyone's question, but the questions that we did address were so important. And so I want to go over the ones. So those of you who got to ask a question, we still recommend that you go back to Treating Healthcare Team with your question. You've obviously learned a lot during this program. And so we want to be sure that you take what you've learned back to Treating Healthcare Team, ask your question. You'll probably understand their answer better because you've learned a lot today. And for those of you in queue and didn't get to ask your question, take your question back to your healthcare team. And be sure to, be sure to ask them your question as well. And most importantly, I do not want anyone to in leaving today's program that you are now part of a community of support, Cancer Care being one of them. We will have other programs on this topic and other related topics, and you'll be kept appraised of them. You also have the Cancer Care Hope Line to call, 1-800-813-4673. Now, most importantly, many of you are able to reach your physician or healthcare team during the day, but weekends, evenings, and holidays seem to be more daunting sometimes. So I suggest that you check with your healthcare team, what number you should use, evenings, weekends, and holidays. Again, I want to thank you all for your participation today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may now disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.